Blog Talk Radio.
Found us in the Sonic Effects, a place where we can lean in together for a short time and reconsider what's happening around us. Special greetings to listeners from Germany and the Netherlands today, just because I can, and to our followers from India. It's a pleasure. I do hope, and I think I speak for everybody that's tuning into this, that you have our best, you know, you have our best wishes and hope that all is well for you during this calamitous time. We have a good program for you today. Just a short pause. A bit of a refocus, a way of resetting the default, because we have a lot of things happening around us, as always. It never really stops. And it brought me to be thinking more lately about capacities. And I'll do a program about that in the upcoming weeks. Really, it's about the things we stumble into as we become aware of the effects Freemasonry, the opportunity and effects Freemasonry presents to an intelligent mind. It is as it always has been, I think, challenging and rewarding. But can you imagine being taught that as you go about handling the tough times, that you do it with an air of resilience, that you learn, as gentlemen have for many, many decades, to handle yourself with composure, to treat the opposing opinion, the dissenting opinion, respect the warrants, to exercise self-control, not that pathetic, emotionally based thing, to avoid the weakness of being active. This is more than most men are taught, or if they had been taught, come to terms with. Basically, it's influence as if you're intelligent enough to source them out. If you're at a point in your thinking, regardless of your background, that you no longer need apologies or avoidance of responsibility for your life. Is that the epiphany? Is that the wake-up call? Where we begin to realize that all that we are and all that we will be is at the end of days our very own responsibility. It's difficult. So where do we go when we face difficulties? Well, you may, for whatever reason, been raised in an environment where certain doors were locked and closed and locked to you. Here, many of those doors are forced open, and you are invited in. The detail to look at the world and somebody whispering to you that there is a detail, as if they are comfortable with your thoughts. The fine detail, the nuance, the subtext, it brings to our attention a context and an experience that is very satisfying. To be able to actually walk out into a rainy day and not feel weary, but to be mindful, to be conscious. The sounds, the smells. Do you know that smell just before a storm and how it's different when the storm has passed? And to hear the crackle of lightning overhead. Mm-hmm. And the wind. The wind brings a temperature, and it's a sensation, and it's a sound. Mm-hmm. In other words, we become more masterful at drawing satisfaction from the situation we find ourselves in. How comfortable. And to be able to be recharged and revitalized every time we gather with one another, where we collect, it's like finding that wonderful restaurant. You know, the place where you've been to the place where they anticipate you, and not in that self-conscious way, but in that comfortable, casual, sort of that New York City kind of air. No, life is what it is. Relax, no drama. That restaurant, the atmosphere, the colors, and, you know, the attention to the, they've done it really well. And the server is so comfortable with you that the banter around the table with your guests is relaxed and just fabulous. That's, I would venture to say, when you're sitting back finishing your first bottle of wine and you happen to pull back and just, not breaking the flow of conversation, but just reflecting and enjoying the moment, is not something you're going to avoid in future. In fact, isn't it interesting that each time you go there, that this whole team of people have created an experience so comfortable that elevates you. They create something beautiful. And we revisit and revisit. But uncannily, they can do it every time. They can anticipate whatever mood we are in when we walk through the door. And within seconds, they allow us to take that deep breath and smile to ourselves. Masonry attempts that, yeah. And when I hear the men bearing witness to those experiences in places around the world, it connects, not within the coldness or starkness of a building or the privacy of our society, but it connects with this sense that we get when you're sitting at the cafe and your cappuccino has just been served to you and you have a copy of The Guardian and the rain's lifted and there's the sun coming out and you're just watching the people go by. Magical. It's magical. You who walks through the gallery and is struck by some profound use of color, the work that has captured motion in line and depth and texture. Imagine this. This is how silly I sometimes think it all is. That some people would think to write exquisite music, exquisite being the music that elicits a sense of tragedy, a sense of drama, a sense of comedy, in the classical sense. Not the knee slapping, well, unless you're a fan. You've seen the giggles in Le Bohème, yeah. Imagine somebody has done that and written music for an entire orchestra. Let's say the 129 piece. Yeah, it's fanciful. Exquisite. And the performance is and then met somebody and said, look at this would be somewhat, and they said, this would be, what if we had a libretto? What if we had poetry set to the music? Poetry, one enhancing the other, the words enhancing the music enhancing the words, like Dvorak's Rusalka, this little water nymph who falls in love and wants to be mortal. But think, who would make that gesture for humanity, for mankind, for humanity? What kind of genius is that? And yet, when I think about Freemasonry, that's the way I choose to think about it. That just surprising genius behind it that would compose this phenomena for humanity. I think that's brilliant. I don't have the adjectives to do service to it. But today we're going to at least attempt at our own awkwardness here at Masonic Effects to give you a small effort. You deserve far more, I realize. The article today, I'd like you to help me resolve it. It's the first part of a series of ideas. And I'd like you to help me with come to the next chapter in it. The poetry, we're visiting William Wordsworth. I wandered lonely as a cloud. You know, I wander, you know. I'm not so much prone to wandering like a cloud. I'm more like the small boy all alone by the ocean. You can see all by the shore walking and seeing all the things that would wash up on the shore after a storm, all the floats and the driftwood and bits of net. And And even when I think about the topic, I breathe in because it's the air. You know that salt air. You're still there. You know, you can travel there in your own thought. And I'm more prone to that, but you can tell when Wordsworth writes this, there are connections. It's not that I'm... Who can travel? And who can travel to the clouds, but in the imagination, there are many of us are there. If you're inclined, the music. Check this out. Sit back, relax, fill your tea or coffee or Merlot or more your brandy. And enjoy the moment.
You hear me? So lucky.
Session men. He was embarrassed about it. He used to be singing in the background at sessions, at recorded sessions, and people began to say, "You have a pretty good voice. Why don't you give it a go?" Man lived a hard life. He even recovered from a very severe beating. I think he was in Detroit. Four men jumped him as he was leaving a bar, beat him very, very badly, and knocked teeth out. It was terrible. It was thought that he could never play trumpet again, but he taught himself. Tell me what you think about that. So you can tell, you'll understand what was on my mind as I was writing this. The assertion of authority has never played well or substituted for thoughtful conversation. I imagine these days saying something as outrageous as that. I must have been listening to an oligarch sounding off. Centuries come and go, but intelligence always rests on the edge, looking towards the stars. Institutional controls aside, subside as they become less fearful and less relevant. Harder and harder to enjoy the advantages of oligarchy when you're being mocked, even by the peasants, you've starved. Creators have lost their fangs and claws to the effects of benevolence and self-awareness. When I must come back to this, validation, we now have a process, thanks to the internet, of peer-to-peer validation. Oh my. How many pagan beliefs were exposed as convincing ploys to subjugate illiterate people? Oppression and suppression have given way. Our new leaders are anti-heroes. Collective consciousness is becoming reality, widespread, acknowledged. Our historians are exposing commonalities that don't work with clumsy politics of division. Ideas generated in the East found fertile ground in the West. Despite Western excursion to conquer a manufactured enemy in the East, the despots could not kill their history or the contributions. Tolerance like that is the corruption and decadence of imperialism. No big thing, yeah. Even morality is being shared not as an anthem, but as a find. Freemasonry is only a subtext to all that is around us. When men had experienced revolt, pestilence, poverty, and the pointlessness of war, their thirsts were slaked by the ideas of Darwin and Newton. We jumped from the absolutism of religion into the probabilistic world of observation and mathematics, bringing with us belief and meaning. Know when to remain silent. Make yourself aware. Watch, listen, and learn. Become a man of value instead of a man of importance. If our private societies are carriers of philosophical and ethical importance, we will praise our scholars. We will puzzle over their messaging to find what we need. And if we want, we will dedicate ourselves to a moral existence by finding a source. Hindi, Buddhist, Jew, Muslim, Protestant, Christian, yeah? We are each construct our own palette, unique to bring along. It's almost as if there is a purpose. It's almost as if we can re-examine whether you and I have a destiny, whether we find some comfort attempting to predict, or whether we are also able to realize by circumstance that and encouraged to believe that we are capable of more than we assume, that we always have a capacity, not for foolishness, not for stupidity. We do have that, you know, just when you think you've seen it all, but a capacity to understand far beyond, to accomplish far more, not as a quantity, but as a quality of existence. Not that Freemasonry it brings everything in existence to its knees. Far, no. You know the type of questions that we strive to answer that we just can't yet. How do we soothe a weeping mother when her infant has died in her arms? If we were so smart, we'd have an answer for that. How to bring the cowards who beat women and treat them as chattel to some form of justice, we would have an answer to that. Influence. It's hard. It's very, very hard, but it's very, very powerful. Here. Sit back and think on this. John Coltrane and Johnny Hartman. This is a lovely old tune.
makes my heart sing like an April breeze on the wings of spring. And you appear in all your splendor, my one and only love. The shadows fall and spread their mystic charms in the hush of night while you're in my arms. I feel your lips so warm and tender, my one and only love. The touch of your hand is like heaven, a heaven that I never know. The blush on your cheek whenever I speak tells me that you are my own. You fill my eager heart with such desire. Every kiss you give sets my soul on fire. I give myself in sweet surrender, my one and only love. My one and only love.
Sometimes it's just that good. We're curious, you know. If I think of the creator, I'm not Panopoulos. This is the way I'm referred to. My creator is evident in everything around, every leaf, every creature, everything. I don't think of it as an embodiment or a man or maleness or a gender. No. If I think about it, you know, for a second that way, just because it's fanciful, to think that we are this creature that can do enormously ridiculous things, but we can also be walking along and then become excited about a discovery or a thought, whether it's around us or something that we were working on. Remember those days when you were puzzling through, pondering the big problems, you know, you're being trained how to think and how to read, all the rest of that. The standard, you know, we're that remote sense of the standard to push yourself. That's what we were being taught. Sloth doesn't work, you know, being lazy, a lazy thinker doesn't, you know, it's not beneficial, it's not healthy. The faculty did that for us, yeah. The mentors around us, whether they were purposeful or not, whether we knew them or not, they did that for us. And here we walk along and then we can, you know, be excited by the discovery that things have began to connect in our thinking. What an amazing process. Somebody lost in their own thoughts and then, you know, bursting with joy, excitement, and then smiling and going about their business. that constant sense of discovery. Here, the researchers and all those people leaning into those labs, all the alchemists helping us to get in touch with our inner being, our consciousness. Mm. And to even today, especially today, so whether it's a laboratory in somebody's garage or in the medical schools, the chemists at their work, where they're making that discovery, somebody looking through, peering through the electron microscope and making that discovery, how do they overcome that sense of exuberance, or do they? You become comfortable with it, you acknowledge it, or you're thinking immediately, this is going to take us another place. This is going to lead us to another place. The next. Here's a man that did that for us a long, long time ago. Go to that other place. Yeah. What's the point? Poems, I've recently read this. So poems can help you say, help you show how you're feeling, but they can also introduce you to feelings, ways of being in the world. People very much unlike you, maybe even people from long, long ago. Some poems even tell you that that is what they can do. Let's see. This man was born without the advantage that we have today. So let's get over this insufferable sense that everything's either getting better or getting worse. Ugh, it is what it is. And we make the best of what is with us if we have the capacity, if we have the ability. You need an excuse, go ahead, make the excuse. Things are getting bad, blah, blah, blah. You get tired of that after a while. And when you're done with that, you've heard yourself say that for the thousandth time. Are you actually convinced? Have you actually convinced yourself? Yeah. But how's that working for you? Everything's going to hell. It was so much better before. Well, here's a little bulletin. There's things going on that are worth passing on even today. And the things that were happening in the 12th century, whether we're marching around with some misbegotten sense of crusade or we learn from the past and the mathematics, the poetry, the music, the astronomy, huh? We learn. And today in hindsight, we cherry pick our learnings. The benefit of working with logic and reason is that it separates out, it distinguishes fact from fiction, you know. That's not to say that we shouldn't be at times capable of being fanciful. Yeah. This man, William Wordsworth, his sister and lifelong companion, Dorothy, was born just a year after him. And then they were looked after by relatives after the early death of their parents. Life was like that, huh? Life was short. Yeah, you could say the same today. And William was sent off to Cambridge, and he spent holidays walking in the lakes and trekking across revolutionary France, 1787 to 1790. Yeah. So he trekked across revolutionary France to the Alps. Yeah. Daft bugger. In 1795, William and his sister set up a home in the West Country, and there they met Samuel Taylor Coleridge, a very, very interesting mind. And Wordsworth published Lyrical Ballads with him, 1798. And they included the lines written a few miles above Tintern Abbey. They've gone through that before on the show. Maybe we could revisit it. But Wordsworth and his sister returned to the Lake District in 1799. Yes, it's curated. Yes, the landscape of Britain, it's all, you know, it was all cut down. The Industrial Revolution just made hell of it. But it was also recreated into something that the likes of me finds very satisfying. So his father was owed a great deal of money. So in 1802, the debtor paid his dad, and that enabled Wordsworth to marry Mary Hutchison. And so life at Grasmere was beautiful, and it inspired him. And like, just a sidebar, find the places or the things or the events that inspire you. Inspire you. Even to understand what that means is a beautiful exploration. And why wouldn't you, if you begin to become conscious of what inspires you, why wouldn't you put yourself in those situations repeatedly? And see, is it like Christmas every day? Do you get tired of that? Or is there a list? Is it cumulative? That's where he wrote this poem, "I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud." And he wrote an ode that we definitely have to get into, Intimations of Mortality. We have to, of course, get into that later. In 1813, within a fairly short period of time, they moved to Ambleside, and he continued writing poetry, but the conservatism of his later work annoyed his radical friends. They weren't happy. They wanted that punch, you know, that push. The guy died in 1850. You can go and visit him in Grasmere in the churchyard. Just after he died, he had written an autobiographical poem called The Prelude, and he had been working on that for many, many years, since 1798. So 52 years of work, and that was published shortly after his death. Today we're going to tuck into a very, very interesting poem. Before analyzing any text, we want to understand its literal meaning. And we'll do this. And for a short poem, you can do it word by word. But for longer, you can do a small summary. And here's the summary that I'll do this first rather than after. And that way we can connect the poetry with the idea, the literal interpretation. When I went for a walk, I felt like I was a cloud floating above the hills and valleys, and suddenly a huge number of daffodils right beside a lake and under some trees. And I saw them. They were swaying in the breeze, and there were so many daffodils that they looked like the stars in our galaxy. And the daffodils formed a line that stretched around much of the bay. And in one glance, I could see 10,000 of them. And they looked like they were dancing. And the waves in the bay also seemed to dance, but the daffodils looked happier. A poet couldn't avoid being happy in this kind of situation. I did a great deal of gazing, but didn't fully appreciate the moment at the time. Often when I'm lying on my couch and feeling a bit emotionless or thoughtful, I can still see those daffodils in my mind. And by the way, being able to remember is quite pleasant when you're all alone. Now, when I recall the daffodils, I feel warm and fuzzy, as if I'm dancing with the daffodils. So don't be too hasty in moving on to analysis. If you don't take the time to look up difficult words, you will be more likely to misinterpret. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze, continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way. They stretched in never-ending line along the margin of a bay. 10,000 I saw at a glance, tossing their heads in sprightly dance. The waves beside them danced, but they outdid the sparkling waves in glee. A poet could not be but gay in such a jocund company. I gazed and gazed, but little thought what wealth the show to me had brought. For oft when on my couch I lie, in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye, which is the bliss of solitude. And then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils.
Thank you.
Hear Keith Jarrett singing, humming along in the background. And some artists just can't not do that. Oscar Peterson comes to mind. There. Nice. Nice. Tensions. Tensions we experience, but not so much random. When you're sensing the tensions within your lodge, it might be worthwhile to question whether they are as random as they appear, as thoughtless as they seem. Think that after hundreds of years, we would have rid ourselves of unnecessary, you know, the potential for risk to our organization, to our brotherhood, the common good. And yet we can and do experience tensions. Ooh, what if we are given the opportunity, and tell me if this is fanciful, to sort out how we deal with those tensions and what they represent. You get into this kind of mindset. It's hard to settle the mind and become resentful because there's always that potential for learning. Instead of pouting away and sulking, we have this unending challenge. Oh, it doesn't stop us from feeling frustrated, but it's when it's repeated, what's that pattern that you're seeing, that you're thinking, that you're feeling? And then do you embrace in Masonic terms a philosophical reinterpretation? Brilliant, hey? What if there is that philosophical reinterpretation and you haven't found it, whose duty is that? I would think that falls on us, don't you? Today, this writer, Jacob, makes some claims I'm not sure I'm comfortable with entirely, but you'll see. She's writing today about the tensions between court and country. It's one of the central motifs in 18th century British politics. But from its very inception at the founding of the Grand Lodge of London, Freemasonry expressed the ideological tensions between court and country. Its literature, sermons, and orations are permeated with it. In Masonic thought, the desire to emulate the luxury and order associated with court and oligarchy expressed itself concurrently with the fear that luxury bred corruption. In general, published Masonic rhetoric had a distinctively court air about it. It identified with oligarchy and monarchy as bound by the Constitution and the Revolution Settlement. That's when, you know, the authority of Parliament was established. It's legislation that established parliamentary sovereignty. When the discussion turned to corruption, it was being held among the relatively affluent who are drawn to and glory in the pleasures and privileges derived from stable government, yet who are also troubled by the consequences. This is also a private discussion, where in contrast to its public counterpart, other values more enlightened than traditional could be affirmed within the lodges. But in addition, it must not be forgotten that some Masonic lodges had the air of the Jacobite hanging about them. But nostalgia for the exiled Stuarts could easily be seen as treasonable in Britain, not the sort of thing that lodges would see into print. Although British Jacobites make their mark in continental lodges, there is no published Masonic literature in English that is Jacobite. Masonic oratory extolled religious toleration, reason, and science, as well as discipline and order. Within lodges possessing a constitutional government, in sermons as well as in constitutions, these principles were seen as the foundation of true Masonry. Within each lodge, brothers were exhorted to build a perfectly harmonious society. The Masonic utopia can exist only in secular time among the prosperous, the meritorious, and the educated. The constitutions of 1723 specifically mandated that lodges must admit only men freeborn of mature and discreet age, no bondsmen, no women, no immoral or scandalous persons. In practice, this excluded male servants and increasingly the illiterate. Promotion within the lodge was to be grounded upon real worth and personal merit only. The title of Grand Master over all of British Freemasonry was to be given to a former master, nobly born or a gentleman of the best fashion, or some eminent scholar or some curious architect or other artist. I absolutely love that challenge. Eventually, those excluded from the lodges were designated as strangers from whose malicious ridicule the Freemason should maintain a meticulous silence. Eventually, on the continent, these strangers became known as the profane. Such men, and initially all women, were incapable, it was argued, of embracing either the wisdom found in the Masonic mysteries or the convivial egalitarianism of the lodge. They were excluded from the social affirmation of commonly held beliefs and values, which, it was believed, could be given expression only through fraternal unity. The civil society created by the lodge was to be a carefully circumscribed space. Thank you. Such a pleasure. Such a pleasure sharing some ideas. If only we could continue this conversation. I think it's your round. If only. Keep in mind the purposefulness, the history behind us. It elevates. That's masonry. That field of daffodils dancing. It comes back to you every time you close your eyes, and when you close your eyes and you don't have any particular thoughts, you're just relaxing. Masonry. Masonry may be that source for you, that source of what we're talking about here, the potential, your potential, the potential of the craft. It varies, doesn't it, from the things that we see and do, the work in progress around us. But I hope that at some level you find that satisfaction. It's what connects us, as in our own awkward way Masonic Effects has been attempting to do for a decade now, over a decade, to connect. So you fellows in Peru are connecting with the scholars in, Masonic scholars in Australia and the ancients in Ireland and Denmark and Sweden and the sophistication of the Netherlands and Germany, the artistry. Here in the colonies, we are obviously the work in progress, and we have much to learn and a growing potential. So I hope that we'll take that potential to another level. The next time we meet, we've passed May Day, so I hope the celebrations were in some way enjoyable for each and every one of you. And where I am, I'm preparing for Cinco de Mayo, the celebration of the Mexican victory. Was that 1862 over the French? And it's celebrated in the southern United States and, of course, in Mexico. So I happened to meet a lovely, lovely woman who had lived in Arizona for a long time. And she, of course, taught me everything I needed to know. So my tequila is already in the freezer preparing for this exquisite occasion, Cinco de Mayo, and just the 5th of May. In the meantime, we commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. And think of the daffodils. I look forward to joining you again in a few days. And thanks for tuning in. It's been absolutely a joy. Thank you.